Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that you can weigh in. Let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. on WKAR AM 870. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even hit me up on email, almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We want to hear what's on your mind. Of course, you can give us a ring right here at the studio, 517-355-9527. And how have you been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversations that you would love to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, email me, or give us a call right here at the Current Sports Studio. So today, we're shaking things up a little bit, folks, because there are just tons of things to talk about. I'm joined by intern Mike Corey and production assistant Matt Lufke as we list the... I mean, it's just so much to talk about, guys. We're just scrapping it. We're going old school Earl Robinson days show right here today, guys. I'm excited. And Mike, man, I acknowledge. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. It's your last week.
I know. It's sad.
Wow. You only have one more show after this, and then it's...
It's sad, but I can't tell because you're always smiling.
You're
always smiling. Life. It's making me smile. It's a big old smile fest.
Well, that's a good thing, man. Well, we loved having you here. Again, your final show tomorrow. Great work here. All right, well, let's dive into our current sports topics. Let's get right to the action, folks. Torrey Hunter, he put the Detroit Tigers ahead with his bat and scored two runs with his 38-year-old legs to help Detroit beat the Minnesota Twins 7-1 yesterday night. Now, on a pivotal play in the seventh, right fielder Chris Herrmann, he failed to get Hunter's drive between him and center fielder Cleet Thomas, allowing Austin Jackson to score easily from first. Now, the Tigers now lead the AL Central by 5.5 games over Cleveland. Now, there's an interesting stat to this, guys. The Tigers, they gave up a 16th straight stolen base later in the inning. That's the longest active streak in the major leagues in quite some time. Now, Miguel Cabrera, he also drove in 3 late in that game, and the Tigers are currently playing their final game against Minnesota as we speak, I believe, and I think we have a score update right here. 108 is when the first pitch goes out. Guys, you catch that game last night, and what were your thoughts?
It's amazing what Cabrera is doing with, you know, he's basically half of himself right now, and he's still, you know, getting big hits, driving in big runs, even though we didn't really need him. Why is he playing? That's really what I'm asking.
And that's the you stole my thunder there, because I was going to bring up that as well. I'm sitting there, you know, looking at, I mean, they have a lead right now in the AL Central.
Right.
They're playing decent. I mean, Torrey Hunter, as I said, they're getting, I mean, and Prince Fielder has been playing great as of late. I mean, why is Miggy in, I mean, your best player on the team, your best hitter on the team, why is he out there playing when he has... he got an ankle injury, a hip injury. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know why he's still in there. It makes you really, you know, just turn your head and say, But I don't know. But, yeah, it's amazing what he's doing when he is injured. I mean, and like I said, late in that game, he goes to the plate and he smacks one, driving in 3. I mean, the man is amazing. It's really remarkable what he's doing even when he's injured. But, yeah, I ask the same thing, man. I don't know why he's out there. I don't get it. I don't understand it. So right now, again, Minnesota Twins, the first pitch of that one is at 1:08 p.m. Tune in for that one. And Le'Veon Bell, Pittsburgh Steelers rookie running back, Le'Veon Bell, he is expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks with a foot injury. That is, unless season-ending surgery is required. Now, already ruled out for the team's preseason game Saturday against the Kansas City Chiefs, the Steelers said they were waiting for a second medical opinion on the right foot of Le'Veon Bell. Now, the Steelers sent Bell's MRI scans to North Carolina to a foot specialist. Now, if surgery is needed, Bell could miss the entire season. Now, Bell, of course, he's a former workhorse for the Michigan State football team. I mean, they ran him silly last year. Unbelievable. And it's so funny. Isn't this ironic? I mean, MSU, he led the nation in carries last year. He doesn't get injured. But then in a preseason game, the first or second preseason game of the season, he gets injured on his foot. I mean, that's so ironic to me.
It is odd, and it's really unfortunate because this is a key time for him. He was basically given the number one job in Pittsburgh, and that would be a really nice role for him. And it's just super unfortunate to see him out because that's a tough injury. I mean, Maurice Jones-Drew is struggling with it. Santonio Holmes has struggled with it. Like, it's a serious injury, and if he has to have surgery and he does miss the whole season, that could really set back his timetable in terms of development.
That definitely could. And, you know, at Pittsburgh, I mean, looking at that team, they run the ball. They run and pound the ball. And Le'Veon Bell, he fits right into that historic system that has been it well for Pittsburgh over the years. So it is very unfortunate to see that, and I really look forward to, I mean, well, I don't want to jump the gun right now because they said, I mean, we're still waiting to see if surgery is needed right now, but he will be out at least 6 to 8 weeks, and we'll see how they go from there. So that'll be an interesting to see how that turns out. All right, MSU football captains. Mark D'Antonio may not be considered the savviest user of Twitter, but he did use it to announce the three captains for the upcoming football season. Now, his tweet said, quote, the 2013 Spartan football captains are Max Bulla, Darquez Dennard, and Blake Treadwell. Pound chase it, end quote. Now, Bulla is a returning captain from last season, while Dennard and Treadwell are first-timers. Notably missing from this list is quarterback Andrew Maxwell, who was a captain for the team last season, but whose starting job is now in jeopardy from the likes of Connor Cook, Tyler O'Connor, and Damian Terry. Now, the fourth captain will be an alternate every week from players on the MSU's Leadership Council. Guys, are you surprised that Andrew Maxwell isn't on that list of captains for this upcoming season?
Not at all. It really speaks to the volumes because the players vote the captains. So it really speaks to the volumes of how the players are really not believing in Andrew Maxwell as their starter. And it's speaking into this divide. Now, there's four people now. There's three before, now it's four. And it speaks to how those locker rooms just becoming divided with all these quarterbacks.
Well, now, I don't know if the locker room is becoming divided. I don't know if that's the right way to put it. But it's certainly not, you know, his job. You know, he's fighting for his own job, let alone a captaincy of the team. I think it speaks to just how wide open it is. That's for sure. I don't know if there's, you know, the Maxwell supporters and, well, you know, any of that stuff. But
yeah. I don't think there's a lot of Maxwell supporters, if there are any. But definitely that's the wording I would probably go for. But it can get divided if he doesn't pick a starter quickly.
Yeah,
talking about D'Antonio.
I tell you what, when I look at this, to me, guys, it's not really a surprise to me.
No.
I tell you why. I think when you look at this, when these names came out, Max Bulla, Darquez Dennard, and Blake Treadwell, and you look at, you know, the conversation we had yesterday about, you know, how Andrew Maxwell is in a battle for, he's fighting for his life right now as far as earning that starting QB spot. And to see, you know, a guy like Damian Terry, who put on a show in that scrimmage, and now there's talks of, you know, Tyler O'Connor, who's been really playing well, and, you know, I could go on and on. It seems as though Andrew, I don't know, he didn't really he's kind of losing it right now. You know, he's kind of losing it as far as his grip on the team, I guess you can say, because he's fighting for his job. So I think leadership and trying to lead the team is kind of the last thing on his mind right now. He's just concerned out there to try to play well.
Exactly. It'd be weird if he was named a captain because, you know, you have a guy who is the captain of the team, but he might not even start.
Yeah.
And in a position like quarterback, like, how can you follow him if he's not even on the field?
Exactly.
So I think maybe that fourth rotating spot, maybe that's reserved for, you know, QB to be named later.
Right.
You know, like, whoever wins that job may also win that captaincy for most weeks. I know they say they're going to rotate it game to game, but who knows? Maybe they're just waiting until they see who is our guy going to actually be.
Right. I could definitely see that happening too. But yeah, I mean, like you said, a guy, I mean, how are you supposed to lead when you're a quarterback at that? That's the prime position in a football game, and you're a quarterback at that, sitting on the bench watching somebody else go out there and play that position. I mean, I think it's impossible for a quarterback who's sitting on the bench to be a captain.
Right. It's hard to command a lot of respect when you're holding a clipboard.
Exactly. Yeah. Very, very true. All right, Josh Harrelson. A week after passing on Jason Collins, the Detroit Pistons have filled their roster spot, their final roster spot, by signing a young big man by the name of Josh Harrelson to a 2-year contract. Now, the deal was part of the first season guaranteed with a team option for the second. Harrelson, who's 24 years old, he was drafted 45th overall in 2011 and has played for the Knicks, Rockets, Heat. Also spent time in Puerto Rico and China. He's 6'10", 275 pounds, and figures to provide depth behind Piston centerpieces Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond. Now, the former Kentucky Wildcat, he won't likely see too much playing time this season, but has proven to be a capable outside shooter with a 32% career average from three-point land. It's not bad for a 6'10", 275-pounder. It's really, really good, actually. ESPN.com, now, they have released their annual NFL Uni rankings, and the Lions are 27th. On that list. That's pretty low. Very, very low. Now, Detroit ranks 27th out of 32 teams, down one spot from a year ago. Now, writer Paul Lucas, he ties the ranking back to the source of most Lions-related misery this decade, which is, yeah, you know that name. Mm. Go ahead, say it, Matt. Go ahead, man.
Matt Millen.
He has your name. Matt. Yeah, yeah. Matt Millen, man. Matt Millen's ghost, this is what he said. This is what Paul Lucas says. Quote, Matt Millen's ghost lives on in the form of the all-black trim of the Lions unis. Every stripe, every numeral, every letter, the color break in the socks, the helmet logo, the face mask, all accented in black. Now, Lucas does love the Honolulu blue, but hates to see it sullied with black. Now, the NFC North rivals, Bears and Packers, they take the top two spots for the second consecutive year, while the Vikings gain 14 spots. Wow. With their recent makeover. Man, I haven't seen the Vikings' new jerseys. Are they? Have you seen them?
They tinkered with, you know, small changes basically throughout, but they do look a lot better.
Really? I'm going to have to check that. I haven't seen the Vikings, man.
I would love to see some sort of, like, new variation on the old silver from the 90s come back. If we really want to get back to, like, if we want to change the looking, like he said, you know, get rid of the trim black, let's throw it back in the silver there, because I love those jerseys. I still have an old-school Barry Sanders jersey from the 90s. That doesn't fit me, but...
Well, I tell you what, call me crazy, but I like the black trim. I don't know. Call me crazy. I like the Honolulu black trim. I'm one of the few who like it. I don't know. Black and blue.
I could go either. Now, what do you guys feel about... What happened to the blue pants for the road?
You see highlights
of Barry Sanders, and he's rocking the white jersey with the blue pants. That looking was sharp, making guys miss. What happened?
I don't know
We went silver, and it's just... I don't know. I don't particularly like the Lions uniforms, but I don't know if they're 27th.
Yeah,
right. I
don't think the Bears are number one. Maybe it's just the old school.
I mean,
it's always like looked the same.
Yeah,
not a big variation, but that's why. And then also,
who votes on this stuff? That's what I want to know.
I think it might just be him.
Is this just Paul?
He does that is like his job, and he does a pretty great. It's a great column. It's really interesting just to read about uniforms, actually. But
right.
I mean, the Packers
so
are certainly up there.
This is just from Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Lucas
this is his
job.
Personal power rankings.
Well, we gotta. I mean, this is just from one man, though. Because each his own in this category.
That's
but
true.
I do feel you. I do love the. I didn't even think about that with Barry Sanders rocking the blue pants.
Oh yeah.
I forgot all about that, man. I need to bring that back.
Something older. You know, just go old school.
Whether it's the blue pants or silver, and just to jump in. Apparently, while they haven't announced anything with the quarterback, D'Antonio is going to tell the players Monday who the quarterback will be for the next game.
Gotcha. That's a great update. And also want to update you guys. This just came through. Breaking news, ladies and gents, here on Current Sports. Aaron Hernandez, he has just been indicted on the Odin Lloyd case of first-degree murder. So breaking news, you heard it here on Current Sports. Aaron Hernandez has just been indicted on first-degree murder. All right, Ichiro Suzuki, he has joined an elite fraternity. And I want to bring up some interesting stuff with this conversation. But anyway, with his first inning hit off of Blue Jays' pitcher R.A. Dickey, Ichiro recorded his 4,000th career hit in his time in Japan and also his time in the MLB. So that's collectively. You're talking about his time in Japan and the MLB. He gets his 4,000th career hit. He joined Seattle Mariners in 2001 at age 27. Ichiro had recorded 1,278 while playing for the Oryx Blue Wave in Japan. Check out the call last night of Ichiro getting his 4,000th hit.
Line drive, base hit, there it is. 4,000 hits. Yonsei. The third man in baseball history to have 4,000 hits. He does it in the first inning, and the Yankees come out of the dugout to congratulate him for a great achievement. In Japanese, David, they would say, omedeto, which is congratulations.
Yeah, 4,000 hits. for Ichiro. He got it last night. Again, that combines his time in Japan and his time in the MLB. Guys, you know what? When I think about this and I look at this, I got to bring this up because when you talk about stats in the NBA or any other sport, like, you know, Kobe's shooting percentage from his time in the Olympics is not measured in his time in the NBA. So is that fair to measure both his time in China and the MLB? Those are two different leagues. I don't know if I respect – I respect Ichiro. He's a great player. But the 4,000, I think we're making too big of a deal about it. I mean, that's a combined time, right? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's all right. Mm-hmm. 4,000 hits.
It's a lot. It is a lot.
It's impressive any way you slice it. I think there's only five players who have done that in both the major and minor leagues.
Right. And those five are Rose, Cobb, Hank Aaron, Stan Musial, and Jigger Stats. So, yeah.
I mean, it's an accomplishment, to say the least. And he's been a great player. And, you know, had he come over earlier, maybe he gets 4,000 all in the majors. You know, it's right. Just... He was 27 when he was a rookie.
Right. Exactly. It is a remarkable accomplishment. But when I look at it, I'm like, man, that's like, I've never heard that before. When you talk about, you know, taking your stats from another league and just combining them to the stats in another country in a different league. I never heard of that. Like, in the NBA doesn't do that, or the NFL. Well, the NFL, I mean, that's different. You don't see guys from Canada coming over to the NFL playing.
NFL Europe.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
I just think it would be just sort of a disservice to his career. And, you know, just because he did it overseas in another league doesn't mean we shouldn't discount that. You know, he did it. He was good over there. He's great over here. So
he's a great player, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then also one more thing I wanted to add on. This is from a story we talked about. It's from the Steelers' official Twitter account. Le'Veon Bell has a midfoot sprain and will not need surgery to repair.
Sweet.
Injury.
Nice.
Thank
Look at
goodness.
That. Mike, you're on it. You're earning your last 2 days, baby.
I'm earning my
stuff,
pay.
Man.
I'm getting paid.
No. I don't know about that one.
And Al, one more thing.
Okay, we got updates just left and right.
Yeah. This is actually related to Ichiro, though. So, you know, you can have beef with the 4,000 hits, but at the very least, he did pass Lou Gehrig on the all-time list for major league hits.
Okay.
So that's still an accomplishment. Granted, he's in 59th all-time.
Right.
But
right.
You know, 4,000 is impressive. Passing Lou Gehrig in anything is impressive.
That's very
so
impressive.
So either way, you know, tip your cap.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, driving and, you know, listening to the radio a little bit, and I'm just sitting there like, you know, relating this to other leagues and sports, you know, it's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you never see a lot of crossover like that.
Right, you never do. You never do. So... All right, really quick, Chris Paul, he was elected NBPA president on Wednesday at the Union Summer League meeting in Las Vegas. Now, the six-time All-Star, he previously served as NBPA vice president and is now charged with stabilizing the players' union after about 18 months of turmoil. So Paul replaces Derek Fisher, whose tenure ends in a shroud of controversy that resulted in the February firing of Billy Miller, the union's longtime executive director. So, interesting there. And also, other news in the NBA, Allen Iverson. Now, according to a source in Slam Magazine, Allen Iverson is slated to announce his retirement this week. Selected number one overall by the 76ers in 1996 out of Georgetown, Iverson played for the Nuggets, Grizzlies, and Pistons during his 13-year career. Now, he finishes with career averages of 26.7 points, 6.2 assists, and 2 steals per game. The 11-time All-Star played in 71 career postseason games, appeared in the NBA Finals once against the Los Angeles Lakers, and won MVP in 2001. Iverson hasn't played in the NBA since 2010 with overseas stints and failed attempts to draw interest from NBA teams. Iverson played professionally in Turkey in 2001. And hey, folks, how can you forget about this clip?
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not a game. Not the game that I go out there and die for. And play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we're talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice? We're talking about practice, man. We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. We ain't talking about the game. We're talking about practice, man. When you come in the arena and you see me play, don't you?
Absolutely.
You see me give everything I got, right?
Absolutely.
But we talking about practice right now.
But it's an issue that you're coming.
We're talking about
practice.
Man, I hear you. It's funny to me, too. I mean, it's strange to me, too. But we talking about practice, man. We're not even talking about the game, the actual game, when it matters. We're talking about practice.
Alan, is it possible, though, that from where he's coming from, if you practice, not you would be better, but your teammates would be better?
How the hell can I make my teammates better by practicing?
That is, you can't talk about Allen Iverson without mentioning that bite, it seems like, in today's world. I mean, that was one of the all-time greatest rants in sports history. I think there's some people out there that might remember Allen Iverson for that practice bite more than his play on the court.
Seriously, I'm just confused what they were talking about.
Right.
Were they talking about the game, or were they talking about practice?
I don't know. Not
it's
the game.
Unclear.
He goes out there and dies.
Cannot draw a conclusion. He said we're not talking about the game 8 times in that bite. I lost count of how many times he said we're talking about practice. I don't know if anyone can keep up with that.
It's great
stuff. Amazing.
It's amazing. That bite will forever live on in Allen Iverson. We'll continue our Allen Iverson discussion later on in the show. We're going to talk about Allen Iverson's legacy. When you look back years from now and mention AI, when you look back at his career, what will you remember most? And is he a top 10 player of all time? We'll talk about that and debate that later on in the show. Stick around. More Current Sports is next. We have a pretty interesting guest that we're going to dive into the world of sports betting. You don't want to miss this one. Current Sports is coming right at you with more.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, many gay service members are planning their weddings, and for the first time, their spouses will get the same benefits as straight military spouses.
We finally can get to the path of full equality within the military to get the benefits, which absolutely is the right thing to do.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, we have an interesting topic for you all. On today's show, we're going to dive into a topic that has plagued many athletes and people, for that matter, for years and years. Probably many of you out there, to tell you the truth. Yes, the world of sports betting and sports gambling. Come on now, many of us have done it, whether it be a harmless gamble on ESPN, Streak for the Cash, which I am not doing well on. I'm on like L3 right now, lost 3 right in a row, terrible. All right, to that $5 bet that you put together on each and every Super Bowl Sunday, to the big wigs in Vegas who lay down thousands each and every day on sporting outcomes. It's a fascinating world, and has gotten athletes like Pete Rose scrutinized and in a lot of trouble. So today, we invite a guest that knows a thing or two about sports gambling. He's a professor at Central Michigan University. Fire up chips. Tim Ottman, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Tim?
Hi, Al. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
No problem. A pleasure to have you on, man. So first of all, Tim, when did your research begin in this area?
You know, it's kind of a funny story. My research began more than anything else because I was intimately involved in it as a college student. I was really, really good at gambling on sports. My little brother ran a bookmaking operation on campus, and my dad was running a numbers game out of a local bar he owned. And so it was something I got involved with and understood. And then as I moved through, adolescence and through college and then became a professional and moved through my academic career, what I realized was, you know, this behavior needs to be investigated, and we need to be able to inform people about where the pitfalls are, where the warning signs are, and what damage could happen. And so I took my experience as kind of my foundation and then started to investigate what was going on with this current crop of college students.
Wow. So, Tim, you were exposed to sports gambling at a pretty young age then, right?
Absolutely. And again, you know, I'm a little older. I'm 47 years old. So I grew up with ABC, NBC, and CBS and PBS. So there was no Sports Center. There was no CNN tickers. There was no cable television.
Right.
So it was all just having conversations with people and building relationships to gather data. But yeah, I grew up with as a sports fanatic. I grew up around that part of the world, and then got into the betting part of it.
So as far as the betting part of it, now you talked about spreading that knowledge and exploring the pitfalls and warning people out there who are exploring this activity. What were your experiences when you first started sports betting? And what were some of the highs and lows for you, Tim?
You know, I think the highs and lows for me are very symptomatic of everybody out there. I think the rush of the bet is really the critical component. When you get involved in the activity, it no longer becomes a part about who wins and loses the game. It no longer is an issue of how much money you bet. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to the rush you get of placing the bet. And that's an addiction issue related to any addiction out there. That rush and that adrenaline pump is part of that issue. And so you got to keep doing more things to get that same rush. And so that's where the dollar amounts or the number of bets or the pressure of having to pay becomes part of that. And so while those are sometimes the highs, that same thing can obviously be the low.
Right. Very, very true. Now, Tim, in your opinion, when does the world of sports betting go too far?
Yeah, it's probably the greatest question you could have asked. And I say it from this perspective. In our country, it's a pretty harmless diversion, or it's seen as that, with the $5 bet, as you mentioned, on the Super Bowl, or filling out a $10 bracket for the NCAA tournament,
mm-hmm.
or buying a lottery ticket, or betting your mom the Michigan State game, and whoever loses has to mow the lawn. We
right.
all kind of see that as commonplace. And unfortunately, that's the scary part about sports gambling. That's the slippery slope. If it comes off as this thing that's no big deal, and the next thing you know, you're 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 steps down the road. Because you think about it, you fill out an NCAA tournament bracket, and we've all heard the stories of, I let my dog pick the teams, or I picked by the colors, or mm-hmm. my girlfriend picked because she liked the nicknames.
Right.
And somebody wins the bracket, and they go, you know what, if I really paid attention to this, because there's all kinds of data, there's injury reports, there's home field advantage, there's weather conditions, there's coaching records, and who's got the best point guard. There's a lot of data to gather, and people go, you know what, if I paid attention, I might be really good at this.
Right.
And so then they go try to do it, and we all have heard of beginner's luck. Well, that's not any different in the gambling world. That beginner's luck, all of a sudden they have a great NCAA tournament, then they win their first couple bets. Next thing you know, they were betting $10 a game, and now they're betting $40.
They
get
hooked.
They have a horrible week, and they're $500 behind, and now they got to pay somebody.
Right.
Because there's not a credit card in sports gambling.
Right.
You're betting usually with a local bookmaker, and they're going to want to get paid.
Right.
So it can very quickly snowball downhill.
Very, very true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we have a special guest talking with us today, a professor at Central Michigan University, Tim Ottoman. He's talking about sports gambling and sports betting. Now, Tim, for those out there listening to the show and don't know, just explain to them and talk about how big the world and business of sports gambling is.
You know, Al, the numbers are really staggering, and the scary part of it is, we're guessing the numbers, and I say that as a not only an academic but a researcher, is we know the data where people can legally bet, which in our country is in the state of Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's about $2.4 to $2.5 billion with a B, bet legally in the state of Nevada on all sports in a given year.
My goodness.
Estimations from the FBI and the CIA are estimating somewhere around $380 billion illegally gambled. So,
wow.
it's crazy numbers out there. And again, are they guesses? Sure they are. But the bottom line is, just say it's 50 times more illegally bet than legal. And the numbers out there of why somebody would be involved are the same with any illegal activity. If there's money to be made, then people are going to be involved in the activity.
Now, when you talk about illegal gambling, Tim, explain that a bit. Is that just, what is that like a behind-the-scenes thing? I mean, how explain what illegal gambling, because I hear that a lot when you talk about Vegas.
Sure. To Vegas, obviously you can go, you place a bet, you're dealing with an institution that follows federal regulations, and it was grandfathered in the enforcement acts of the early 1960s that Las Vegas could continue to accept sports bets. We don't have that ability in any other state in our country. Every state has their own rules and regulations, but we'll use Michigan as an example. It's illegal to place a bet with someone else with a value attached to it. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm betting with you the Michigan-Michigan State game and we bet $20, technically I've committed a misdemeanor, $1,000 fine up to a year in jail.
Wow.
It's as simple as that.
Just something that small can be, it's
illegal. Now, am I going to, as a police officer or a law enforcement agency in the state of Michigan, am I going to come get you for that $20 bet? No, I'm probably not, just like I'm probably not going to come get you if you're smoking a joint of marijuana.
Right.
But what's going to happen is the next level up is I'm now the person who's running the NCAA tournament bracket, and I got 200 guys that give me 10 bucks. Now I'm committing a felony because I'm running a gambling operation.
Right, right.
And that's where, technically, is where the legal law places us. Now, again, an enforcement issue, do we have the ability to stop every NCAA tournament in the country? No, but my job, I think, as a researcher is just to say, gang, while this might seem like a harmless diversion, it is an entry into an illegal activity, and it can spiral out of control. Not everybody that takes a drink of alcohol becomes an alcoholic. Not anybody that's ever smoked a joint becomes addicted to drugs. And not everybody that ever buys a $5 square at the Super Bowl has a gambling problem. But nobody does if they don't try it first. And these simple things that your mom and dad introduce you to or your buddies on the playground introduce you to, it does start an activity that could potentially spiral out of control.
So, Tim, it sounds like, I guess it depends on the size and the amount of money involved when it comes to that bet then, right?
Not really. I could bet you a dollar and it's still a misdemeanor. But if I'm the one that is collecting the bets, as opposed to an individual bet between two people, is the misdemeanor bet. But if I'm the guy who is collecting bets from the neighborhood, I'm now a bookmaker, and he's committing a felony.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you're preaching, man. Thank you for that. Now, Timken, I want to go back in the day for a minute. Let's travel to the 90s for a minute. Can you talk a bit about the Mike Tyson era? Now, many consider Mike Tyson, they gave him the nickname Mr. Vegas because of the influx of people that flocked to Sin City to place a bet on Tyson and that fight. I mean, it was unbelievable. Now, how big of an impact was that on the sports world?
You know, it has so many different impacts. It's amazing. One is obviously the city of Las Vegas has founded itself and been very successful of bringing in big shows. And big fights are kind of one of the things that really brought Vegas to the forefront. So there's an economic impact related to the city where the host site is, just like a Super Bowl, just like an All-Star game, those type of things. But when there is a premium athlete that generates interest, the number of bets obviously goes up. There's no more. There's two events that are our biggest gambling events traditionally every year in our country. It's the Super Bowl and the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And you will see literally hundreds of thousands of dollars change hands every minute in Las Vegas legally, but illegally it's millions of dollars because everyone wants to bet. Think about an NCAA tournament party that you've been to where your secretary gets involved.
Right.
That's a whole new person that's betting, not because it's the Cavaliers versus the Pistons on a Tuesday night. It's because it's a social activity that now there's parties around it and commercials and all those other things. So the impact from a countrywide standpoint is pretty phenomenal. And I use this as probably the best example, Al, of how important sports in our country is. When 9/11 happened, we didn't have Sunday football the next weekend. And the way the country kind of came back together, based on some statements from our president and obviously the commissioner of the NFL, was, hey, we're not going to let this change who we are as Americans. Our way of life is to play football, professional football on Sunday, and we're going to go play. It was it dangerous from a terrorist standpoint? Absolutely. 100,000 people in the stadium. If I was going to commit a terrorist act, that might be a place that I would look. And we, as a country, said sports is more important in terms of who we are as a social fabric.
Right.
And unfortunately, gambling is just as important part of that. People play the game because we want to determine the winner or loser, and people bet because we don't know who's going to win.
That is so.
If we know who's going to win, then nobody's watching the Super Bowl.
Right.
Nobody's watching the commercials. Nobody's buying Doritos. Nobody's buying Bud Light. But because we don't know who's going to win, then we all watch. Well, if people are gambling and games are being come fixed or points are being shaved, what this thing is that is sports in our country completely changes.
And that's something I also want to ask you about, Tim, because I don't know if you know about Tim Donaghy, with the NBA ref who actually, was accused of fixing games and calling games in favor of a certain team. And then, there's countless examples and speculation when it comes to boxing. In your opinion, do you think that sports betting has corrupted the sports world in a way?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And what's really scary is NCAA has done some studies within the last 10 years, and one of the things we saw in that study was obviously an anonymous admission from athletes that they were either taking money to fix games or were shaving points on games. But 4% of the officials admitted that they were betting on games in which they officiated on. So it's a really scary issue when we've all sat in front of a TV and go, that official's on the take.
Wow. So you said 40%, Tim.
4%.
Oh, 4%. Gotcha. Okay. This is what I'm making clear. Okay.
4% of the officials were gambling on games in which they were officiating.
Wow. That's still a lot.
It's still a lot. Sure. It's 4 out of every 10 games.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've all watched a game and go, how could he miss that call?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe even in a subconscious way, he missed the call, but it affected the outcome of the game. And, with contracts and commercials and, new stadiums being built and the livelihoods of ushers and all those things that are affiliated with sports, those are all related to the bottom line. So the corruption of sports, as probably I had the ability to view it growing up in the 70s and 80s,
mm-hmm.
That age of innocence, I think, is gone because we in this country have so much access to information that nothing can happen without everybody knowing about it. And I have a 10-year-old daughter, and she's kind of starting to get into it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wish she could watch the sport the way I saw it in the 80s without having so much knowledge about it. That
right.
being said, the knowledge about it, hopefully, again, kind of my role as an educator and a researcher is to let people know, is this the worst crime in the history of the world? No, but it is something we need to be aware of and educate people about. We've done a great job in this country of slowing down drunk driving. We've done a great job with AIDS education because we communicated and educated people about the pitfalls. I believe the same thing can happen with sports gambling. If you start to think about, you're not going to watch the Super Bowl if you already know who's going to win.
Right.
It's a really cool day. It's a cool Saturday for the entire country. But let's keep it in perspective and make sure that people know where those warning signs might be.
Right, right. Now, Tim, have authorities tried to crack down on it more to make it a sort of, I don't know if you can use the word clean, but clean, quote-unquote clean, a clean form of recreation, in a way?
No, it's a great question, Al. I think the governing bodies have done a pretty good job. The NCAA really has done a nice job with their Don't Bet on It campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Student-athletes, administrators, athletic trainers are all going through a process on a college campus about the pitfalls. If you go into every Major League Baseball stadium or football stadium, there's a humongous sign right in the locker room that says it's illegal to bet. Pete Rose isn't in the Hall of Fame for a reason.
Right.
So I think those people have done a good job, but society has done a really poor job. It's okay to buy a lottery ticket. It's sponsored by the government. It's okay to go to a casino in our country once you're 21 years of age. There's a casino within 200 miles of everybody in the United States. So gambling is kind of part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I don't think it makes a lot of sense when 48 of the top 50 newspapers in our country published the point spread.
I don't think
it's a great idea when Chris Berman tells us who's going to win based on the point spread. Because what that does is set a mindset out there that that's what matters, is do they win or lose by a point spread, not did they win or lose the game.
Right. Right.
And that's where I think the world gets skewed. And fantasy sports is a great example of that, which, by the way, is exempted from sports gambling because it's a combination of statistics that you're betting on, not the outcome of an actual contest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a great example. I go watch a football game, and I'm worried about Gronkowski catching a ball for a touchdown, but I might want the other team to win.
Yeah.
And now I'm not even going to watch who wins because that's my fantasy guy on the other team.
So true. You sound like me, Tim.
It's a totally different world of how we watch the games anymore. And again, you grow up and Kirk Gibson's on the Tigers, and I'm rooting for the Tigers no matter who they are. But if I was a fantasy guy and Kirk Gibson was on the other team of my buddy who I was trying to get against in the playoffs and he hits a home run, now I'm going to be mad my own guy hit a home run.
Right, right.
So the world changes a little bit.
It definitely does, without a doubt. Now, before I let you go, I got to ask, you talked about Pete Rose, and you talked about that's a player who was actually betting. With your experience and your research over the years on this topic, how prevalent is it to see a player betting?
You know, it's probably more prevalent than we will ever know. And again, it's one of those behind-the-curtain type things. But I will say this. The player of today probably is gambling less than the player of 20 years ago for one specific reason.
What's that?
They all make a lot more money.
True.
So, for example, if I'm, you know, I'm the Pete Rose of 2013, I'm Miguel Cabrera. You think Miguel Cabrera is going to take $30,000 to throw a game? He makes $25 million a year.
Right.
But you go back to 1970 and offer a player $30,000 to throw a game, he might.
Right.
Because
that's
he
true.
Wasn't making that money. And the same thing if you talk about a basketball player or a football player at a school like I'm at, like at Central Michigan University, the chances that they're going to go out and be a number one draft choice, if they don't become a professional football player, they're going to become a teacher and make $40,000 a year, and you offer them $5,000 to throw a game, they're much more apt to do that than the starting running back at the University of Michigan because that guy's got a contract waiting.
That's so
and
true.
So
yeah.
I think the world changes based on how much money in the sport currently exists.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point. And Tim, great conversation. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I would love to have you on. This is such an intriguing conversation. I gotta have you on in the future. How's that sound, man?
Anytime, Al. Just give me a holler.
Sounds great. Well, there you have it. CMU professor Tim Ottman. Thanks for joining me, Tim. Take care.
Thanks, Al. I appreciate it.
No problem. All right. Well, when we return to current sports, we will dive into Throwback Thursday, and we also will continue our Allen Iverson discussion. And on our Facebook page, I encourage you all to leave a comment. Our question is today, what's the legacy of Allen Iverson once he does leave the game for good? We've had an overwhelming response. We'll get to some of your comments and also give you our thoughts on it. Stay tuned. More current sports is coming right at you.
On the next Fresh Air,
5 guys, 12 pubs, 50 pints.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost join us. Their new comedy, The World's End, is about 5 old high school friends reuniting to finish a pub crawl they began 20 years earlier. It's the 3rd film of the trilogy that includes Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Join us.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. We are moving on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're taking your calls right now to discuss anything on your mind. 517-355-9527 or hit me up on Facebook.com/Current Sports. Tweet me. Give us a call. You guys know the routine. And you know what? During that break, I said the wrong thing, guys. That's Fresh Air. coming up at 3 o'clock, all right? It's been a long day. That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. I already said here and now, so tune into that. It's a great show. Great show. Don't want to miss that episode. Talking about Shaun of the director of Shaun of the Dead, they have this new movie coming out, right? I think you guys are talking about it. What's the name of it? I don't know what
it's
name
called
of it.
The World's End.
The World's End. Yeah, they're going to talk about that today on Fresh Air, 3 o'clock. Tune in for that. And we're going to dive into a quick discussion really quick about Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson, it's been reported from Slam Magazine that Allen Iverson is officially, he's calling it a career, folks. And we asked you guys out there, what do you think AI's legacy will be looking back years down the line? Now, you guys have definitely have, man, a lot of comments here on it. And first I'll get to Jalen Bell. Jalen Bell says, quote, I think AI should have hung it up a few years back personally. Many view him as one of the washed-up great players of the league. AI's sheer talent carried him through the NBA, and I believe if he had a better worth ethic, practice, really? He would have retired in the league, too. Hence the infamous practice interview. No one can forget what he did on that Sixers squad, however, brought them to the finals practically by himself. Very, very true. Jesse Goldberg Strassler, of course, voice of the Lugnuts, he also commented saying, and he said, played the game at a different speed than everyone else on the court. Loved him from his Georgetown days. Mark Adams says, best crossover of all time. He even shook the heck out of MJ. Michael Jordan, who can forget that? That was unbelievable. Carlos Camacho says, still my favorite player of all time. Joe Morrissey says, I think AI is a perfect representation of that post-Jordan, pre-LeBron era. He was drafted in the same class as Kobe, along with Antoine Walker, Starberry, Ray Allen, Steve Nash. AI was the most talented player out of that draft class. And Joe goes on and on. Joe wrote a Charles Dickens novel on our Facebook page. Thanks a lot, Joe. He's a constant supporter. He listens just about every day. Really appreciate all of your comments. Very well put and very well said. And AI, guys. So when you look back years and years down the line at what AI and the type of player he was, what he was all about, what do you guys think his legacy will be?
What I think the legacy will be in... For those listening, I'm Alex Sharg. I was just queuing Al up for a little bit.
Yeah, you ran engineer for me. Alex is in the studio
That's
now.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
No problem.
You do it all. You do it all.
You got to make you smile, like Mike said. But when I look at Allen Iverson, the first thing that comes to mind is the Philadelphia 76ers and the fact that Allen Iverson had many troubles with his teammates on and off the court. So when I look at Allen Iverson, is he a great player? Yes. Do I think of Allen Iverson crossing over Jordan? Of course. But do I think of Allen Iverson as a role model, player, and leader? I don't know. Because not only has he struggled to win championships, but he's struggled to be a role model.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it depends on if you want to sum up Allen Iverson's career in one word, two words, or three words. One word, gunner. Because that's what he was.
He
the guy,
definitely was a gunner.
He could shoot, and he was going to. Even if he wasn't open, he was going to shoot.
Yeah.
Two, volume scorer. Same lines. You know, he had 48 in that game one win over the Lakers in 2001 in the NBA Finals. I watched the highlights a little bit earlier. He had like 25 field goal attempts in the first half.
He's a gunner.
Chucking them.
Yeah.
But he was so effective. He basically carried that team. He had no one on that team.
No one. I mean, I think Mutombo was on that team.
Mutombo,
Eric Snow, Spartan.
Aaron McKee, Todd McCullough, Matt Geiger. The you know, corpse of Tony Kukoc walking out there. Theo Ratliff.
Right.
None of those guys are, you know, top-level players.
I believe.
He did it by himself.
I believe right. Detroiter Derek Coleman was also on that team.
I think so.
I think he was.
I think so. Don't quote me on that. I think so, though. Well, let's go to the lines real quick. We have Apachu on line one. How you doing, Apachu?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks. Great program. When I think of Allen Iverson, loved him at Georgetown, loved him his first couple years in the NBA. I've never seen a player with the incredible tenacity that they had. I mean, nobody had his tenacity, in my opinion. However, later on, he just became so egotistical, and everything was about him. The tattoos got ridiculous. arguing with the refs became ridiculous. Everything was about his ego, and he did so many things to draw attention. Yeah, here he was, one of the greatest players playing guard that I ever seen. But what sticks out is tenacity and his egotism. But other than that, man. You know, he was the order to watch until he got to that point of me. Right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Apache. Appreciate you tuning in, man. Yeah, AI. And Mike, we didn't get to you. I mean, he brought up some great points that we'll get to in just a second. Mike, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I want to – for me, it's hard to, like, put – because in recent memory, you know, you do remember, you know, all the egotistical rants and me talk and destroying the Pistons' legacy when he was traded here in 2008. I really want to remember for the person – you know, who's scored 26 points a game. In the one of my favorite memories, you guys talk about Jordan. One of mine is from the game one of the versus the Lakers in the playoffs, hitting a crucial three pointer and stepping over
Tyronn Lue. Yeah.
That I will always remember that, and that's like the first thing that will always pop in my mind when I think about Allen Iverson. Besides practice,
that's — I'm gonna make up a word here — that's the swaggiest moment in NBA history. That was just — he hits a three, stares at him on the ground, steps over him. I mean, for me, guys, Allen Iverson was my favorite player growing up, because this is when I wasn't exposed to Jordan. I got exposed to Jordan when I was in middle school. During my elementary school years on, Allen Iverson, my nickname, if you go back on the west side of Detroit, I know you guys are listening, because, I mean, you guys, I love you guys. You guys tune in every day. My nickname back in the hood, in the D on the west side, was AI. They used to call me AI because my name is Allen, of course. That's my full name. And I had a game like AI, not just like him, but I had that fearlessness. But anyway, that's another subject. But yeah, I mean, he was the guy I looked up to. He was unbelievable. He was just fearless. AI, the thing was that when you look back at the way he played the game, was that he was just, for me, when you sum up the way he played the game, is just fearless. He didn't care who was in the paint. It could be Shaq. It could have been Wilt Chamberlain. It could have been anybody down there. AI was going to take that ball and try to score on you. I don't care who you were. And like you said, he was fearless. He crossed over Michael Jordan and stared at him after he hit the shot and made the shot on him. I mean, he was unbelievable on the court. Possibly the funnest point guard to watch, or the funnest guard to watch since Isaiah Thomas. A scoring machine, like you said, man. A gunner, though, I tell you that. He would shoot a lot. Like, but he didn't have nobody around him, so I mean.
Exactly, and you know, he's a 5'10", 165-pound guard dominating the NBA.
Right.
Like, pound for pound, he was probably the best player of his generation, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he was unmatched. What he was doing on the court was insane because he was, you know, a foot shorter than guys in the paint, and he would go in there and just, you know, hit scoop shots over him all day. And, like, that was his game.
Yeah,
but, like Apache said, he probably, you know, whatever the opposite of aging gracefully is, he did it. Because, you know, he wasn't willing to accept his limitations, whether they were physical or just age. You know, he wouldn't go into a bench role. He said, I'm not going to come off the bench for anybody. But it's like, you know, Allen Iverson, you are 36 or whatever he was at the time. It's like, you're not the player you once were, and he never really came to terms with that.
Yeah, that ego definitely was one of his downfalls, so
for
to
sure.
speak. And, you know, a lot of people, you go back to, you know, his days growing up, and a lot of people forget about the bowling incident. You know, when he was at the bowling alley and he was accused of, you know, being in that huge fight and almost went to prison and could have screwed up his whole basketball career. But that was, you know, that's one of those experiences that AI always reached back and says, you know, that's why he plays with a chip on his shoulder. And now I got to ask you, before we do a quick throwback Thursday, guys, is he in your top 10 of all time?
No.
Not in top 10?
Not even close.
Not even close to it.
Great player. Top 10 is elite territory, though.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with Matt.
No top 10?
Yeah, there's in my mind, there's just so many people that was better than him during their careers that just that overshadowed him.
Why is he not in your top 10, guys? Just curious.
Never won a championship. You know, he wasn't a great teammate by any...
Is Charles Barkley in your top 10?
I don't know. I'd have to draw up my top 10. There's a lot of great players out there.
If there was a player that, if we're measuring it by championships, if there was a player that didn't win championship that would be in my top 10, it would be Charles Barkley.
I just don't even think there's one amazing top 10 player that argues about practice. Plain and simple.
So just from a character standpoint.
Exactly.
We're going to have a Barbershop Wednesday. I think I might make it next week. But I'm putting AI in my top 10. I got a plethora of reasons why.
Oops.
We'll get to that
looking
later on.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that one. Next week, that might be our Barbershop Wednesday topic. Matt, what do we got for our Throwback Thursday segment?
All right. Dog Days of August, but this is a busy one. All right, we'll go back. 1851, the first Royal Yacht Squadron Cup, which is a terrible name. Thankfully, they changed it.
Awful name.
Changed it to the America's Cup. America beats England in a yacht race. It's a big event every year. 1950, Althea Gibson becomes the first black tennis player in a national competition. She was a great tennis player, won a bunch of majors as when she went professional. That was as an amateur. 1951, the Globetrotters, this is a little basketball action.
Mm.
Globetrotters go to Berlin and play in front of 75,000 people at the Olympic Stadium. And for that game...
The Olympic Stadium Globetrotters.
Yes, they featured Jesse Owens, who, of course, in 1936 had a great performance at the Berlin Olympics. So he came back. It was the largest crowd ever to see a basketball game at the time.
My goodness.
1987, the United States men's basketball team, they lose their 34-game winning streak in a defeat to Brazil, 121-15 at the Pan American Games. 1992, the Detroit Drive.
Exactly. What is that? Detroit Drive. Was that a football team?
They win Arena Bowl number 6 over the Orlando Predators.
Nice.
Hit me as you said that.
Yeah. You reached for that one, man. That was really good.
And 1989, wouldn't be a Throwback Thursday without a Nolan Ryan stat. His 5,000th strikeout over fellow Hall of Famer Ricky Henderson. Then we get into some interesting stuff here. 2000. Rockies versus Braves. Catcher Brent Main becomes the first position player since 1968 to win a game. Now, it was 6-6 in extra innings. The Rockies had no relievers left. Main had an injured left wrist and was out for 4 games. His manager asks him, "Can you pitch?" Having never pitched before, Main says, "Sure." Goes out, throws 1 inning, gets out of there, you know, scot-free. 83-mile-an-hour fastball, so, you know, maybe a little slower than the guys were used to.
A lot of slower.
He gets out, they score a run in the 7th, he gets credited for the win. And then in 2007, the Rangers hit 2 grand slams in the same game and beat the Orioles 30-3.
30-3, oh my goodness.
Most runs in modern MLB history.
Wow, great list.
I'm curious with that position player, how many hits, how many runs, if any, he gave up?
He gave up 0 runs.
0 runs.
0 runs. Wow. And just threw in there.
And 3 outs.
In. Threw him in the water.
Philadelphia Phillies player Wilson Valdez did it in 2011, but that's not as exciting.
That's unbelievable.
And it didn't happen on, you know, August 22nd or whatever it is.
Unbelievable. Great list. Great list, Matt. And also, in 2001, Brett Hull, he signed a 2-year deal for $9 million with the Detroit Red Wings. And Albert Pujols, he went 0-for-5 to end a 30-game hitting streak in 2003. All right, fun show, guys, as always. And, man, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Shard, Matt Lucky, our production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, and I should say Alex Shard as well, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to CMU professor Tim Ottoman for joining us same time, same place tomorrow. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Listen to some jazz, take care, and be easy, people.